Welcome to The Crucible, where the Southern African Institute of Mining and Metallurgy gives you a front row seat to conversations with specialists in the minerals and metals sector. SIAM has well over 100 years' experience in and commitment to protecting the professional standards of our industry. Join us now as we discuss the key issues and global initiatives to give you the relevant information needed to make informed decisions, to influence policy that directly affects our sector, and to help our industry grow in an uncertain future.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the SIAM podcast, The Crucible. Today, we are going to talk to Dr. Elmer, who holds a PhD in chemistry from the University of Pretoria and also MBA from the Open University Business School in the UK. He started working at Sasol in research and development, then moved to BHP Billiton, to the Technology Centre, and then 13 years at AECI before joining Mintec. Dr. Elmer has extensive experience in doing research himself, but also in the management of various research projects and personnel. He's the author and co-author of more than 17 papers and 20 patents, and he has presented at numerous international conferences. His industrial experience is diverse and covers topics from new chemical product developments to pesticides, explosives, to mining and metallurgical environmental solutions. He is currently the executive manager for hydrometallurgy at Mintec, and the Hydromet department is very active in battery materials and critical minerals technology and process development. I believe, Dr. Elmer, if I'm correct, your Hydromet department has also restarted the recycling of lithium technology development. I think I'm saying that correctly. Could you please jump in and help me out here?
Hi, good morning. Yes, as I was introduced, I have advanced experience in metals in metallurgy. And yes, you are right. Because of the changes in power supply in South Africa, we are starting up research into recycling. If you asked me this question 2-3 years ago, I probably would have said that with all the power issues, etc., why would we start something like that? Because in how many years will it be before we actually have batteries to recycle? But because of the real boom in solar and in PV and in photovoltaics in South Africa, those batteries are actually starting to come on the market, or the second-hand ones or the used ones are starting to come on the market, and they are becoming available. And people are now asking the question, but what are we supposed to do with these batteries? Because I think if you had your ear on the ground, or you listen to the news or watch the television in the last couple of months, you probably would have seen about a ship going down in the North Atlantic that contained cars with, or electrical cars, and there were some accidents like that. So people are definitely asking the questions, but what are we supposed to do this? We can't just add these to a landfill. And we just felt that it is definitely high time that somebody in South Africa really look into recycling lithium-ion batteries. I know there are companies and organizations that are really doing that, are already doing this on a small scale, but we really feel that we need to do a big effort into what are we going to do with these batteries and what would be the best way forward.
That is excellent introduction, and I'm going to go a little bit off course, because today we actually want to talk about rare earths, the global impact and the sustainability thereof. But I've got a question on what you've just said. Two questions, actually. Is it true, is the statement true, that our capacity for renewable energy is sort of throttled, or the bottleneck is batteries? And then secondly, is it true to say that although there's a lot of research going into renewable energies, what to do with the batteries to enable renewable energies is not that well researched? Are those two statements true?
Well, I'm actually going to say yes and no. if you look at what is available from the metals that go into the battery, if you look at what is available at the current rate, yes, we can supply enough, we can mine enough lithium and some of the other metals to go into the batteries. But if you look at the forward trajectory and you look at 2050 and beyond, then we will probably struggle. So then recycling, and how do we treat recycling and how do we rework these batteries, will be extremely important, because if the current trajectory continues, there will not be enough for us just mine and take it out of the ground. So the limiting factor currently is not really the batteries, but in future, this is definitely going to be a problem.
Okay, that is concerning. So maybe let's take a step back. Let's start from the beginning. Could you tell our listeners a little bit more about rare earth minerals and why we should all be sitting up and taking notice of rare earths?
Yeah, look, the name rare earth actually gives a false impression that rare earth metals are actually not that rare. They can be found in various forms in the earth's crust. So you can find them in clays, in soils, even in coal. I mean, coal contains rare earth material. The problem is that it's a fairly low abundance overall. You do have some exceptions. I mean, we have a deposit here in South Africa that contains more than 10% rare earth oxides. But those are the real, real extreme exceptions. Overall, we sit mostly at about 0.3%. So it is widely available, but it's not that high percentage. And then the second issue with rare earth materials, they're difficult to then extract or leach out of that host material, which then makes it more difficult and a lot more expensive and intensive overall to do. But why are they important? They are used almost everywhere in our lives at the moment. And by day, people are almost finding more uses for them. I mean, electrical cars, ceramics, magnets, wind turbines, computers, TVs, lights, fiber optics, superconductors. Then if we go to the defense industry, they're used in guided missiles, night vision goggles, laser rangefinders, communication equipment, stealth technology. It is really, you can almost not think, how did we get by without them 20 years ago, if you look at how they're used. I mean, specifically in a cell phone, I mean, that everybody's got, there is a little bit in your touch screen, in the colors in the phone, the colors in the screen. There's lithium in the battery that everybody, of course, knows about. Then in the wiring and the microelectronics, in the microphone, in the silicon chip, everywhere you find these rare earth materials. So they are becoming critical in the sense that they are extremely important for our technology and where we are currently as people on this planet.
So it's actually a scale. If I think about this, it might be abundant, but it's difficult to mine and it's difficult to metallurgically extract or leach out. Then it's very, very critical for our technology development, as you said, anything from cell phones to computers, but also, you know, in the defense industry, like you said. But if we look at the critical importance in this industry, what would you say is the world's consumption of rare earths per year? Because I'm seeing numbers like 200,000, but if we put that into perspective for our listeners, minerals like iron ore is what, 3 billion tons a year, aluminium, 70 million tons a year. So it's extremely critical, but the world consumption, what is that like per year compared to other minerals?
Look, you are right. I mean, we are currently sitting somewhere probably between 200,000 and 300,000 metric tons per year, which does not sound like a lot. But as I said, the problem is it's difficult to obtain it, and you need to process so much material to actually get that. Say, for instance, if we go 300,000 tons a year, if we say on average that the source material, would it either be a clay or whatever, contains 0.3%, you can do the numbers and you can then work out how many millions of tons of material do you need to process to actually get to the 300,000 tons.
That makes sense.
Yes, where in iron ore, for example, I mean, if you go to the Northern Cape here in South Africa, you know, some of those ores contains up to 30, 40, 50, 60%, you know, iron oxide.
Exactly.
Which is, you know, 100 to, you know, sometimes 1,000 times more than what the rare earths are. So that is where the problem sits, that to do it, it is not that easy, and you need to process quite a substantial amount of material.
That is very true. And I mean, if you look at the coal industry, as you've mentioned, some coal you can even put on a train just as is. And that's 100%, let's call it beneficiation. It's literally pit to port. If we look at major producers of rare earths in the world, let's take it from the 1990s. 38% of that came from China, 33% out of the US, and let's say about 12% from Australia. But as we entered 2008, that picture significantly changed, and China accounted for almost more than 90% of the world production. So as I have it, they jumped from 38% to more than 90%. And that's really shocking, because by 2011, they jumped to 97% of the world production. So if you look at this balance, what is the role that China is playing in the supply and demand of rare earths, in your opinion?
Yeah, look, there are several reasons for those numbers that you quoted. Number one, it is, or up to now, it has been quite a dirty industry. Let's call it a dirty industry in the way that it was done. You know, it was bad for the environment. You know, people generated, you know, incredible amounts of waste that they just discarded. So a lot of the more Western companies, you know, as the pressure mounted on them to do, you know, to be more environmentally conscious, etc., they scaled down on doing this, and you know, they moved a lot of that production to China. Also, we can sometimes criticize China in what they're doing and how they go about it, but they had the foresight that they looked at this industry, you know, 25, 30 years ago, and they realized the value of and where the world is going and how the value of this will increase. So they really increased their production facilities, they locked in supplies all over the world. You know, they identified mines, where would be the best places to mine these materials, etc. So they had a long-term strategy. And that is why it increased to, you know, 90 plus. So it's environmentally, it was there was a environmental reason, but also just good foresight from the Chinese that they saw that. And now they are the major producer in the world. And the issue now is that I think the Western countries are realizing that this could actually be used politically. If you are a producer of a material that people need and you produce more than 90% of what the world consumes, you are in a position of power.
There's a red flag, definitely. There's a red light for me there.
Yes, because, I mean, about 2 years ago, they did use it as a political weapon, in the sense that they did push some of the Japanese manufacturers of these high-tech materials. And they said, you know, there's constant tension between China and Japan. And they just said, we are not going to supply you. And the prices skyrocketed. They stopped doing that and the prices went down again. But I think, you know, all of these issues pointed to the West and said, or indicators to the West and said, look, we need to find an alternative way to do this. And we need to work on our own production. And we need to find our own ways of doing this and producing this at a cost-effective way or in a cost-effective way. But the problem now is you're trying to play catch-up with China, and China did invest huge in the infrastructure, in you know, equipment and in plants to actually, you know, extract these materials and purify them. Because if you remember what I said right there in the beginning, it is not that easy to do. But now, you know, because of China's foresight, they did invest, and now they are the world's leader. And we're all trying to catch up, and we're all doing our utmost, and we're all doing research and development and trying to find new ways to do this in a better manner that would also be not as bad. No, I shouldn't actually say it, not as bad, but not affect the environment like we have seen over the last 20 years in China. We are really working on new ways and new innovative ways of leaching out these materials and then doing the individual separations in a more ESG manner.
Sustainable yes. manner, right? Yes.
Yes.
So we're talking about how difficult it is to mine and to extract, that you really need to look at a mass reserve or resource. We are saying that China had the foresight. They did invest. They are now 97% of world production, contributing to 97% of the world's production. And then we mention the West. So when you say the West, I immediately think of the US. So if we look at the United States of America, what are we seeing there? What I'm seeing currently in, you know, in theory, in literature, is that they want to do the same as China. They want to secure a mine-to-magnet supply chain. Are you also seeing that? Is that practically being done?
Yeah, look, the American government's definitely investing money. But they have a different, you know, funding model than China, where the Chinese government would in general be more active in, for instance, in an industry like this, and they would do a lot more direct investment, you know, in plant and equipment. Where the American government, you know, their approach is more that they expect private companies to do it, but they are also supporting, and they have a number of government funding avenues available to these companies to actually do it. And we are, as Mintek here from South Africa, we are also working with a couple of companies in America to do this. And although not directly supplied as the Chinese model is, they are definitely indirectly getting money from the American government, because they are realizing that they definitely need to develop this. And probably the one that is the furthest developed in America would be the Mountain Pass development. So if you go and look that, you can search that on the internet. They have been ongoing probably for 10 plus years now. They did produce, and then they went through bad times and they struggled a bit with technology, but they're now also moving into that direction of making high purity individual rare earth metals. So they're probably at the forefront when it comes to America, but indirectly, America is also supporting, you know, research and development in Europe, here in South Africa, and in South America. I mean, all the Western countries have, in the last probably about year and a half, published what they call their critical mineral lists. And yeah, I mean, America, Canada, Australia, most of the EU countries. We're actually working on, as a side note, South Africa is actually working on a critical mineral strategy ourselves. Mintek is involved with the DMRE, to develop that for South Africa. But back to the rest of the world, they all have these, strategies, and they all publish these lists. And the rare earth are on all of these lists. They're definitely listed there because, I mean, all countries will need this in the end. So they all are identified as rare earth metals as critical, and they are all doing, in various parts of the supply chain or in the value chain, they are doing research and development into these materials to make the supply less reliant on China. I mean, realistically, as you say, China is supplying more than 90%. So it's going to take some time to bring that number down. But everybody's working on that because it is what everybody realizes, that we cannot afford to continue like this and have one country dominating in this. I mean, that is just not good practice at all.
Yeah. Yeah, like we said, that's a red flag. I've got so many questions now. I want to ask Dr. Elmer if you could just give that resource name again that the US is currently looking at that we can actually go and research.
It's called Mountain Pass.
Mountain Pass. Okay, great. So yes.
You can search under just MP as well. If you say MP Rare Earths, that you'll pick it up as well, the company.
Because I'm looking at the investments, like you mentioned, some will be from the private sector, some will be from government, but I'm looking at the investments here and I'm seeing figures like $80 million, US dollars in Chile, and then $400 million in the US. I'm seeing $800 million in Australia, if we compare. And then you mentioned South Africa. Or even if we must, let's look at Africa. But what is South Africa and Africa doing around rare earths? Do we have any resources or reserves that we can go and research? Do we have any funding? What are you hearing?
Look, Mintek is currently doing a project, a pilot project on rare earth materials. To leach and purify rare earths from phosphor gypsum waste. There's a big waste dump or a number of dumps actually around the Palaborwa area, which comes from the last 50 years of making phosphoric acid. So we are actually doing a pilot campaign for a private organization. I'm not going to name the name yet, to actually isolate the rare earths. So that is to produce a mixed rare earth oxide. The other one in South Africa that is probably worth mentioning is Steenkampskraal in the Northern Cape. Steenkampskraal contains more than 10% rare earth oxide in the ore that they mine, which is extremely high, and they are one of the exceptions. Then there are also a number of other deposits scattered around South Africa. We have Lofdal, we have some mineral sands that, you know, come from beach sand actually, that also contain rare earths. So we do have some deposits in South Africa. The issue overall with South Africa is that although we have a few deposits, none of them are real global size. When I'm talking global size, I mean that you can produce, you know, between 20,000 and 40,000 tons for the next 20 to 30 years. We don't have deposits that size. So that is unfortunate for South Africa. But if you combine all the smaller deposits, South Africa do start to fall into that category. But various companies and organizations are looking at it, yeah. But again, we all know that, as I said, initially, difficult to separate, takes up a lot of resources, with the electricity issues that we have, with some of the other transport issues, etc. in South Africa, it does make it more difficult. And people do try and look at reserves that are, or deposits that are very close to the coast, for example, to try and, mitigate the issues with shipping and rail transport, etc., where it would be a lot closer to actually just, mine the material, process it, and put it in a ship, and then either send it to either the, you know, in Asia, preferably not China, as we don't want to, you know, make that problem even worse. But then America or in Europe, you know, the Europeans have also started to put up processing facilities. They're looking at doing that. They are looking at making electrical cars in Europe. In America, I mean, everybody knows about Tesla, but everybody's looking at that. So the markets in the, let's call it the Western world, are definitely also growing. But in South Africa, we do sit with the issue about, you know, it's a, you know, when we started out and we said it is not something, it's not easy to do. It's not like mining, for example, copper or iron or manganese, you know, the real commodities that South Africa is well known for. It is not that easy. It is more resource intensive. And then also there's the downstream processing in South Africa is not developed at all. So the best currently that we can do in South Africa is to make a rare earth oxide, a mixed rare earth oxide, which you will then ship, as I said, either to Europe, America, or Japan, Korea, these countries that are also have facilities to process it further.
That is very interesting. So just a question on that one. In South Africa, we actually do not do downstream beneficiation or processing. We then export, let's say, a concentrate, or we export an oxide mineral.
Yes, that is currently what is happening, yeah. Look, I mean, it's also linked to the market in the end. It is a very similar issue that we sit in South Africa with electrical cars. We have a very good car. Sorry, I'm digressing a bit, but I mean, you'll see the parallel. We are making a lot of internal combustion cars in South Africa. I mean, Ford is here, BMW, Mercedes, Volkswagen, Toyota. I mean, they're all here and they're all making cars here. But currently it's mostly, not all, but mostly internal combustion engines. Now all of these car manufacturers, they sit with a conundrum. If they now switch over to electrical cars, how many electrical cars will they sell in South Africa? The market is still going to be, you know, North America, Europe, Asia, even Australia struggling a bit with similar issues like South Africa, not electricity-wise, but huge distances, charging infrastructure, etc. So even if you do make the cars here in South Africa, it will still mean that you need to export the cars to, you know, put them on a ship and move them quite a big distance to where the market is. And the same with rare earth materials. So even if you do make them here and you do invest into the downstream beneficiation, again, we don't do manufacturing of wind turbines, of cell phones, of, you know, electrical cars.
And we don't have a big defense industry either.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so you will still need to ship it somewhere. So it makes a lot more sense for those companies to make a concentrate or make the mixed rare earth oxide and then ship that currently. The situation can change in future, but that is currently what makes sense to the big organizations.
So you are not just hearing about rare earths in South Africa, you are actually seeing research happening in South Africa. You're actually seeing the mining and the extraction in South Africa. So there are definite activities around rare earths in South Africa.
Yes, definitely. South Africa is moving into that space. Absolutely. And the research, we as Mintec, we are increasing our research and we are really embarking into quite a big research campaign that we've started up at looking at the whole downstream processing. We are looking at that because currently, more than 80% of the value sits in when you, or it's, or the, that value is only realized once you start to separate the individual rare earths. So 20% of the value is trying to get to your mixed rare earth oxide, but if you really start to separate out the individual rare earths, then you really get the value. So we are looking at new technologies and different technologies to do that. As Mintec, and we are working with a couple of universities as well, that have some expertise that we feel can dovetail into what we're doing to develop this industry. Because we feel that there's definitely value in doing this.
Well, that is excellent news. So I want to put you on the spot a little bit, Dr. Elmer, and ask. We said at the very beginning, we are looking at, let's say, 200, 300,000 tons a year consumption of rare earths. If you had to project, what do you think those numbers will look like in the next, let's say, 10, 15 years?
Look, as I said, I mean, if you look at the current trajectory and you look at where it's going and the growth, I would say that it would probably, it's probably growing, around 10 to 15% per year. But that's new materials. But we as Mintec, for example, are not really looking at the recycling of the rare earth material yet. We are looking at lithium battery recycling, but the rare earth recycling as well. So depending on what happens in that space, I would probably say between 10 and 15% per year. But that is also then related to what is happening in America and in Europe. How are they developing their downstream facilities? How quickly are they coming online as well? Because if we stay reliant on China, it is really going to be how the Chinese will control and what they see and how they are then managing the industry going forward. So if we can take them down to 50 or lower, in the next 10 years, then that number can actually change as well.
Oh, there's a lot of levers here. There's a lot of drivers. And yes. I know during our conversation, you mentioned this as well, but I want to just touch on that again. What would you say are the major challenges holding South Africa back, to be a significant contributor? I know we mentioned the difficulty of mining and the difficulty of beneficiation, and also that we do not manufacture most of these products in South Africa. So understanding that, what else would you say are major challenges for us, keeping us back from contributing?
Look, the basic answer would probably be money in the end, because it is not something that is easy to do, and it's not something that is cheap to do. And really getting the money to do it. We have so many issues in South Africa that although on the one hand you have the DMRE and they do realize that South Africa has a role to play and we should do it, but we also understand that there's a bigger government and we have so many other issues in South Africa that it's difficult to channel money into something that probably a lot of people in the country would not understand. But a big issue is, of course, just getting the funding to actually build a pilot plant. I mean, as Mintec, we developed a technology to actually, separate out the rare earths and to just do a major size pilot campaign. This is not a production plant that would produce, 10 to 20 or 30,000 tons a year. But just to do a pilot to do this properly, you're talking about 300 million plus, rands.
Oh, my word. That's still a big number for me. It's still a huge number for me.
So you see, that is where the problem sits, is that we have these little deposits in South Africa, and to just do a really big pilot where you process a cup, a decent amount, That is the kind of numbers that you talk about. So getting that number, getting that money, and doing it. I know we have funding agencies like the IDC, etc., but it's not that easy. And there are other priorities for the country, which again is understandable. So money is an issue. We also have a skill shortage in South Africa. I mean, we all know, I mean, you can't almost open a newspaper or a newspaper website lately or not hear about the brain drain and the people leaving the country. Yes. So that is an issue. We do have an issue that we are not, producing enough qualified people. We're also the quality of education. We're walking a thin line. We definitely need to look at that as well, about what we produce. And then, unfortunately, if you talk to universities, I did a visit to the Western Cape universities 3 weeks ago. And if you talk to them, they all tell you that the number of students that are studying metallurgy and mining, have decreased over the last couple of years because it is an industry that, let's call it at all, that is not seen as being a sexy industry to be in. Most people look at mining and they go, you guys are destroying the planet. You're, creating just waste left, right, and center where you're going. You understand? So,
yes, I completely understand that statement. Yes.
Yes, because I mean, people look at it. So all of these challenges make it really difficult.
I'm hearing funding. I'm hearing skills because of various reasons. I mean, like you said at the beginning, the industry could possibly be viewed as dirty. Let's use that word. I want to ask. It sounds like the funding and the skills walk hand in hand with research. So is the statement true to say that South Africa is not exactly a front runner when it comes to research, development and optimization? Is that true?
Look, I think we have lost or losing out at the moment. South Africa had a boom period. I mean, if you look at the numbers, 30 years ago in South Africa, we were, top three producer of gold, and some of the PGMs. Well, we're still pretty high on platinum and palladium, but South Africa was a leader, and that is partly why an organization of Mintec is in existence, is because of, what was done. But South Africa did go through difficult times. I mean, overall, if you look at what's been happening with our economy, etc., and mining definitely lost out. We are trying to build it up again, and we are doing our utmost. And that is partly why I went to see the universities. We are looking at ways to change this, to really, raise awareness and explaining to the people what are we doing and what are we trying to do to get away from, the real, I wouldn't say that people are looking at mining, as bad, but at least change the way people look at mining, that they realize. And I think if we can get the numbers again, we can get the students. It's almost like a catch-22. If you don't have people, then you struggle with the technology, then you start to lose out. And if you get the people, then you can do the technology. You understand? It is almost like chicken and egg. Which one do you get first? And we just want to raise awareness and get more students at university, that the research can really bloom again. It is still happening, but we are losing out. We are definitely losing out compared to the rest of the world.
I can completely understand that. I also want to add to what you just said to sort of say it's two parts. You want to change the perception about, let's say, the mining and metallurgical industry, but you also want to invite people to start becoming part of the solution. You want to do the research, like you said, it's chicken egg, it's a catch-22, but you want to invite people to start becoming part of the research, the development, and the optimization so that mining can start building its reputation again so that we can actively partake in the ESGS drive. So I completely support that statement. And with that being said, I now have this key question. What are the top three things that we are doing as a collective, as a global industry, to create a more sustainable supply of rare earths? So, for example, in the media, I'm seeing things like recycling. I think you've mentioned that, reuse. We've talked about research and development now quite a lot. We've talked about, you said it's not as easy, but we've talked about improving extraction technologies. What would you say are the top three key things that we are doing to become more sustainable?
Yeah, look, it's difficult to actually probably just limit it to three, but what you've mentioned there, I think what we do, we definitely need to do it better. And when I say better, is we need to be more efficient. And then also when it comes to waste and the waste that we generate, we definitely need to decrease that. That is where the recycling and the reuse come in. Also, looking at alternatives. I know that Tesla, for example, announced a couple of months ago that they are going to develop, you know, magnets for their electrical motors that go inside the car that are not permanent magnets, because these rare earth magnets are permanent magnets that they want to use electromagnets, for example. So I think looking at alternatives so that we don't have to mine, because this is an intensive industry, the rare earth industry, to mine and extract. So if we can do recycling, we look at alternatives, and then I think if we can decrease on the waste, put a lot more into waste. You know, people are still, you know, we're a throwaway society, and people generate a lot of waste. I don't think people realize how much waste. So if I think if we can improve those three things, then I think we will be, you know, on a good path forward.
If we consider the amount of investment, I think we've mentioned now about $400 million in US, $800 million in Australia. Putting you on the spot again, Dr. Elmer, putting you on the spot. If you had to say how much investment would South Africa need to take us from research to actual?
Oh, that is a really difficult question. just to do a decent sized pilot is 300 million rand.
I think it's almost half a billion if you look at it in that way. It's almost half a billion rand.
Yes. I think it's, for me, it's not just about the money. I think there needs to be a will to actually do this, because it is impossible to do something on this scale for a small country like South Africa if your government doesn't support it. So they need to support in from legislation part, from you know, approvals, all of that. I think
it's that a strategy. It's a strategic decision. It's not just the funding. It's okay. Yes. I hear what you're saying.
So I can tell you, yes, we can build a big plant for, you know, 5 billion rand, for example, and we would produce, you know, 40,000 tons of rare earths per year, etc. You know, get everybody together, but there needs to be, because we're a relatively small country, you know, with a limited budget. I think it's going to take more than money in South Africa. It's going to be more, everybody needs to work together to understand where do we want to be, number one, on what do we want to achieve. And then you need to have buy-in from private sector, from the government, everybody, to actually then get to this. So I'm not going to say a number, that's probably, you know, dodging the question a bit, but I think that is what is required in South Africa. We need to work, you know, look at the bigger picture and where do we want to be with this and how are we going to get there? And in the end, exactly what you said, what is the strategy going forward? And that is what we should focus on. And once that is clear, I think also when it comes to foreign investment into South Africa, it will become easier to get foreign investment if they can
absolutely
see that we have a clear strategy and a clear plan of where we want to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Become more attractive for foreign currency to flow into our country. And coming back to the strategic decision, and as you said, it's going to take Morris funding. I cannot tell you how many times on this podcast our subject matter experts made that statement that you just made to say we all need to collaborate. We all need to work together. And I think SIAM is trying to create that platform to bring everyone together. I think SIAM is looking at hosting a rare earths conference and a battery minerals conference. And I think I'm correct in saying, Dr. Elmer, I think I'm correct in saying that you are participating in those conferences. I think I'm correct.
Yes, I'm involved in both of them. The Rare Earth Conference is it June, July, would be in Namibia. It is the second Rare Earth Conference. And then we have a Battery Materials Conference in August in Nelspruit. So, yes, I'm involved in both of them, part of the organizing committees on those two. And we are getting interest from all over the world. We have some really interesting keynote speakers lined up. I did not attend the first Rare Earth Conference, but I attended the previous Battery Materials Conference, and it was really good. And we had participants from the car manufacturers, for example, that I spoke about earlier, etc. And they all made contributions to where are we going and where do we want to be? Just on the battery materials, I was talking about the recycling and how the batteries are coming onto the market. I mean, we had a battery conference 2 years ago, and one of the speakers, he echoed in what was at that stage, what was in the news, that, you know, South Africa is only selling 500 electrical vehicles per year. Our recycling industry doesn't really help to throw money in it. And now we're 2 years down the line. And now our situation is completely different. And it shows how quickly it changes. So Although these conferences are every second year, and that was a decision we made, I think it's going to be both conferences will be extremely interesting.
So we are looking forward to June, July. We are looking forward to August. And if anyone wants to take Dr. Elmer up on his offer to collaborate, to start taking hands and working together, please don't hesitate to contact either SIAM or Dr. Elmer to get involved in these conferences, to come and do your bit to get involved. And Dr. Elmer, I want to say thank you for the time that you spent with us today to shine a light, a spotlight, a floodlight on rare earths, the critical importance, the difficulty there is in extracting and beneficiating this, and the market development and the collaboration it's going to take for us to be one of the players in this industry. Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Elmer. We appreciate.
No, thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity. And as you said, Mintic is always open with collaborations. We are happy to collaborate with research organizations, universities, and then also commercial partners. We are open. Our model is that, you know, we do research, but we also do process development and project development. So please, we are open to work with everybody, and We definitely want to work with people in the rest of the world as well. We're definitely keen taking this out and really, really becoming known globally as an organization that you can rely upon.
Thank you for that invitation, Dr. Elmer, and wishing you well in that endeavor. Thank you, everyone. That's a wrap. We'll see you next time on The Crucible.
Thank you for listening. Please note that the facts and opinions expressed are those of the individual and do not reflect the position of SIAM or the corporate institution.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.